This is Dina Weiss, Parashat Miketz, Storing Fortune for the Future. In the beginning of this week's parasha, Paro is dreaming. His dreams are frightening and disorienting, but Paro knows better than to ignore them. He consults with his advisors, but finds their interpretations wanting. His unrest is unresolved. When his royal butler hears of Paro's distress, it reminds him of his own and the dream that he had when he was in prison. The butler remembers how Yosef, a fellow prisoner, was gifted in the interpretation of dreams and urges Paro to consult him. Paro finds in Yosef not only an interpreter for his dreams, but an architect of his nation's future. The text does not tell us why the interpretation of his advisors was unsatisfactory to Paro. However, we do see part of what made Yosef's interpretation so special. It is that he does not stop at mere interpretation. He does not only tell Paro what the dreams mean, he also guides Paro through the message they impart. Yosef teaches Paro how to manage the years of abundance and the years of famine. Yosef's ability to advise Paro in this way is a direct outgrowth of his own experience. Indeed, Yosef has experienced his own cycles of plenty and lack. He therefore knows what it means to be patient and to store up hope for the future. Yosef not only provides Paro with a strategy, Yosef embodies this strategy. He thus provides a model for us to deal with the vicissitudes in our own lives, thereby teaching us how we must and can learn to prepare for our own times of scarcity. Paro selects Yosef to provide the recommended leadership and swiftly appoints him as his second in command. The Torah spares no detail in describing Yosef's appointment. Vayomer Paro el Yosef, Re'eh, natati otcha al kol eretz Mitzrayim. Vayasar Paro et tabato me'al yado, Vayitain ota al yad Yosef, Vayalbish oto migdei shesh, Vayasam revid hazahav al tzavaro. Vayarkev oto b'merkevet hamishneh, asher lo, Vayikra'u lefanav avrich, venaton oto al kol eretz Mitzrayim. Paro said to Yosef, "See that I have placed you over all of the land of Egypt." Paro removed his ring from his hand and placed it on Yosef's hand. He clothed him in linen garments, and he placed a strand of gold around his neck. He had him ride in his second chariot, and they called out, "Genuflect!" And he was placed over all of the land of Egypt. Upon closer inspection, we can see why the Torah indulges in this elaborate description. It is, in fact, a step-by-step reversal of Yosef's fate. When he first approaches his brothers, he is desperate for them to listen to his dreams. Now, Yosef is a renowned interpreter of the dreams of the king. His brothers stripped him of his ketonet pasim, the fine garment that his father gave him, and now he is clothed again in royal linen and gold. He was brought down to Egypt as human chattel on a slave caravan, and now he rides in the chariot, befitting his new status as the second in command to the king of Egypt. Perhaps the most striking example of this reversal is portrayed in the way that Yosef is ushered into the palace. Vayishlach Paro vayikrat Yosef vayiritzuhu min habor, vayigalach vayichalif simlotav vayavo al Paro. Paro sent for and beckoned Yosef and rushed him from the dungeon, the boar. He shaved and changed his clothes and came to Paro. The Hebrew word for the dungeon from which Yosef was freed is boar. This is not an accident. A boar is also where Yosef was cast by his brothers. When Yosef is brought from the boar to the palace, he emerges completely from the unfortunate chain of events precipitated by his brother's jealousy. He begins to take his fate into his own hands and to move it in a positive direction. The term boar here is very deliberate and instructive. When the royal butler refers to the prison that was his former home, he says that he was Bamishmar, in custody. Yosef's master, Potiphar, sends him to the Beit HaSoar, to prison. Yet Yosef himself refers to the prison as a boar. Yosef understands his life trajectory as being in and out of the pits that he has been thrown into. In his own narrative, every dark place from which there should be no escape is a boar. And crucially for Yosef, every boar eventually leads to freedom. A boar is neither a pit nor a dungeon. A boar is a cistern. This is the reason why, when Yosef is initially thrown into it, the verse testifies to the fact that there is no water inside. V'habor reik, ein bo mayim. Since a boar is created with the express purpose of collecting water, the text reasonably tells us that this particular cistern is empty. The image of a cistern is not just reflective of where Yosef is, but is an expression of who Yosef is. There are a number of ways to get water. You can dig a well and try to retrieve water from underground. You can identify a spring or a river and carry or channel the water from its natural source to your field. You can wait and pray for rain, or you can dig a cistern to collect it. Choosing to dig a cistern is both a cautious and a courageous choice. Employing a cistern is trusting that the rain will come, and at the same time acknowledging that the rain isn't guaranteed to come exactly when you need it. Creating something to collect the rain is a strategic plan to stockpile when you have plenty and spend what you've collected strategically and frugally. At the moment when you dig the cistern, you implicitly declare that you know that there will be both lean years and years of plenty. Sometimes your boar will be full. Sometimes it will be empty. A cistern mentality braces for and even embraces that fluctuation. Up and down, empty and full is the cadence of Yosef's life. He loses his mother, but then becomes his father's favorite. He is about to be killed by his brothers, but then his life is spared. He rises in the ranks at Potiphar's house, but then he is imprisoned. He leaves the prison, and on that very day, becomes the viceroy of Egypt, saving the lives of the Egyptians and many from the surrounding areas, including the brothers who would have killed him. It is precisely this life experience that enables Yosef to supply Paro with the strategy that he needs in order to sustain his country in the years of famine. Paro is used to relying on the Nile. His is an irrigation mentality. He needs Yosef and his cistern mentality in order to prepare properly for the years of scarcity. The Midrash in Bereishit Rabbah subtly indicates the way in which Paro and other similarly powerful and privileged Egyptians are completely ill-equipped to handle the adversity foretold in Paro's dreams. When the famine comes, the verse describes its intensity as covering, quote, the entire face of the land. The Midrash remarks on this odd turn of phrase. V'hara'av haya al kol p'nei ha'aretz. Ra'oi haya lamikra lomar al ha'aretz. Mal tamud lomar al p'nei. Amar Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachman, l'lamedcha shelo hitchil hara'av ela ba'ashirim. She'ein p'nei ha'aretz ela ashirim. The famine was on the entire face of the land. The verse should have said, on the land. Why does it say on the face of the land? Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachman said, this comes to teach you that the famine began with the wealthy. For the face of the land necessarily refers to the wealthy. This midrash makes an unintuitive claim, that the people who were first affected by the famine were the wealthy and the powerful, the top stratum and the face of Egyptian society. This is not usually the case when it comes to natural disasters. Ordinarily, it's the poor who suffer disproportionately.
as the poor lack the resources and infrastructure to defend themselves from the damage. It usually takes more time for the wealthy to be adversely affected. However, the natural disaster which was the Egyptian famine was not like most. Most catastrophes are unforeseen, but Paro saw that the famine was coming in a dream. Paro was privy to a divine communique about the impending disaster to come. But what was most unique about this famine was not its prognosis. It was the miraculous fact that before the famine descended, God sent enough plenty to last through the difficult years to come. This is why the wealthy people were at a unique disadvantage. Usually, the wealthy and powerful have more physical resources in the face of a disaster, and therefore fare better when it comes. However, in the Egyptian famine, everyone was provided with enough physical resources in the years before to last them through the difficult years to come. So having wealth was not what would determine whether or not you would survive. What determined whether or not you would survive was your ability to save those resources in order to be able to rely on them later. In a famine such as this, the advantage goes to the people who have experience with saving, with tightening their belts, with delayed gratification. It does not go to the people who command the most material resources. It goes to the people who have spiritual resources. The people who were poor, who experienced hardship, knew how to prepare for additional hardship. They knew that having enough is not a stable state. It is a fluctuating condition. If you have more than you need today, then you should save for tomorrow. The body of the people understood this and had practice in it. But the face of the people, the privileged few, didn't know how to manage the increase and therefore couldn't adequately prepare for it to disappear. In this situation, the people who have a boor mentality survive. Those who harvest the rain when it comes and save it for when the water stops are those who know how to live through drought. Perhaps Paro realizes that Yosef's life of hardship and lack prepares him to lead the country through rationing measures. Maybe he realizes that his own life experience as a pampered king by the Nile leaves him ill-equipped to guide his people through this challenge. A boor mentality is not only about money or physical resources. It's an entire approach to harvest and hardship, plenty and lack. In life, there are times of bounty when you might have the feeling that you have everything you need. Stretches of financial security, closeness with other people, intellectual excitement, and religious meaning. But there will also be lean times of feeling financially, emotionally, and spiritually strained. To be a cistern means to save and savor the times of plenty, and to spend that physical or emotional sense of abundance at the time when you feel that you are living without. It is to realize that the experience that you have of not having enough is what gives you the wisdom and the emotional fortitude to continue on when things seem impossible. The person with a boor mindset remains calm and even-keeled and uses the long-term perspective. The experience of having to save in the good times, to tide yourself over in the bad times, is enshrined in the laws of Shemitah, the sabbatical year. In the ideal Shemitah that the Torah envisions, God promises that the bounty of the sixth year will extend to cover the financial loss that leaving the land fallow in the seventh year will engender. V'chi tomru, ma nocha bashana hashvi'it, hein lo nizra v'lo ne'asof et tivuatenu. V'tiviti et berchati lachem bashana hashishit, v'asat et hatfua lishlosh hashanim. If you say, what will we eat in the seventh year, given that we can't plant or harvest our produce? I will command my blessing to you in the sixth year, and it will produce the equivalent of 3 years. According to Vayikra, the dynamic present in the Egyptian famine, of great prosperity followed by desperate panic, rain, then drought, is not a once-in-a-history event. It is a universal dynamic. It didn't happen just once for 7 years. It happens every 7 years, and survival depends on planning accordingly. Yet, the lesson to be learned from Shemitah is not about holding on to the land's bounty. It is about reminding us that there is nothing in God's world that we truly own. During the Shemitah year, the land is considered ownerless, and when the Shemitah year arrives, all debts are canceled. God does God's part by providing years of plenty. Human beings have to do our part by saving up our good fortune, then letting it go. According to Dvarim, the danger of the Shemitah year is that when we see it coming, we might become more stingy, less likely to lend, and more inclined to hoard, and harden our hearts against those who do not have their own savings. Therefore, it says, "Patoach tiftach et yadcha le'achicha, le'aniyecha, ule'avyoncha be'artzecha." You should open your hand to your brother, your poor, your destitute in your land. Yes, it is important to save like Yosef, but it is equally important to distribute like Yosef, to open your heart to your brothers and your palm to those in need, to spend our resources wisely. And to spend our resources well also means to share what we have, both the spiritual and the physical, with others. Wishing you a Shabbat that will sustain you through the coming week. Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you for listening to our weekly Divrei Torah. To see more from our archive, please visit hadar.org/Torah.